Chapter 5. Of all the experiences which have befallen me in a century or more of service to the Golden Throne, creeping through a network of darkened tunnels in search of a foe which could be lurking almost anywhere is one I could very well have done without becoming so familiar with. I don't know why, but show me an enemy of the Emperor and chances are I can point to the nearest hole in the ground with the near certainty of finding their lair festering away down there. Chaos cults, gene-stealer swarms, mutants, you name it. They all seem to scurry for the darkest corners they can find. And then, of course, someone has to go in after them and winkle them out.
1. Kane is exaggerating a little here, but it's certainly the case that a significant proportion of the heretical and unclean gravitate naturally to undercities and similar habitats. Then again, given the hostile nature of many worlds, both Imperial and Xeno, the population may have had little option but to burrow underground to survive, which at least partially explains the prevalence of such labyrinths throughout inhabited space.
And far more frequently than I'd like, that someone turns out to be me. Partly, I suppose, that's due to my inflated reputation. When something dangerous needs doing, who better than a hero of the Imperium to get stuck with it? But in truth, I suspect that, as Castine told Logash, in most cases I really am the best man for the job. In theory, at any rate, my old Hiver's tunnel sense brings a definitive advantage, but in practice, enthusiasm for the job is most definitely absent. You may take my word for that. In this case, though, while not exactly pleased to be back in the network of tunnels, it was rather more attractive than the alternative. True, there was our mysterious beast to worry about, but I'd already wounded it once and didn't anticipate it putting up much of a fight, not with a full squad of troopers to back me up and the indispensable Jürgen, who'd managed to scrounge a melter from somewhere. He'd done the same on Gravilax, and we both found cause to be thankful for his foresight. Indeed, after that little incident, he'd become quite partial to that particular item of equipment and tended to bring it along whenever we might meet heavier resistance than we anticipated. As it turned out, I was to have occasion to be even more grateful than usual for this little habit of his. But in all honesty, if I'd known what we were going to find down there, I would have charged the orcs, even the Gargant, with a broken chair leg, rather than set foot in those caverns again. As it was, though, I remained in blissful ignorance, and even felt relaxed enough to joke with my aide as he fell in at my shoulder, preceded, as always, by his distinctive bouquet. "Did you remember the marshmallows this time?" I asked, echoing Amberlee's jest when she caught sight of the melter he was carrying on Gravilax. He smiled sheepishly. "Must have slipped my mind, sir." "No problem. We'll just have to find something else for you to toast," I said. "I'm not sure that would be wise," Logash said, hurrying to join us, and looking somewhat askance at the heavy thermal weapon. "That would pretty much vaporize the creature."
"Along with a fair-sized chunk of the wall behind it," I agreed. "Melters are designed to punch through tank armor, and using one to eradicate a single creature might seem like overkill to most people, but so far as I was concerned, there was no such thing, especially when you were dealing with something the size of the beast I'd glimpsed before."
"Then we might never know what it was," Logash objected. I shrugged.
"That's a disappointment I could learn to live with," I said, then took pity on his crestfallen expression. "But I'm sure it won't come to that. Jürgen's choice of weapon is purely for worst-case contingencies."
"I see," he said, nodding, and clearly trying to imagine what those contingencies might be. Well, he was going to find out soon enough.
"We're here," the pointman said, his voice tinny in my combeat. The squad sergeant, a stocky young woman called Griffin, called a halt, and Logash shut up, eager for a sight of our quarry. I would have preferred to be accompanied by Lustig and his team, as they'd been down here before, but Penland was too stiff from her healing injuries to tackle any more ice faces, and I didn't want to be backed up by an understrength squad. Besides which, as veterans, they were needed at the front line, especially with the approaching menace of the Gargant. Griffin's squad had seen little combat so far, and the sergeant herself was newly promoted, so this little errand had seemed like an ideal chance to break her into command without too much pressure. Ironic, as things turned out. Her troopers seemed competent enough, and had got over their impulse to gawp at the ice formations and the sparkling reflections in the first few minutes, settling into the routine of a Xeno hunt with reassuring efficiency. I looked down the tunnel to where the beams of our illuminators reflected back from the tumbled heap of ice shards which marked the boundary of the hole I'd fallen into before. It was as eerily beautiful as ever, and despite the grimness of our errand, I found myself savouring the sight as I turned to speak to Griffin. "This is it," I said, "the end of the map. Once we pass this point, we're in unknown territory."
"Understood, sir," she saluted crisply, without betraying her nervousness to anyone less skilled than I was at reading body language. She began to issue orders to her squad.
"Voorhees on point. Dreer and Carter, cover him. Hail Simla, watch our backs. We're moving as soon as the Commissar gives the word. So look alive, people."
Despite her inexperience, she was a good motivator, and I began to feel a little easier about our travelling companions. Most of them, anyway.
"Are there any tracks?" Logash asked eagerly. Griffin looked at him with an air of vague surprise, as though it had slipped her mind for a moment that we were being accompanied by a civilian. She shrugged.
"You're the expert, you tell us." Anyone else, I suppose, would have had the sense to realise he was being snubbed. But Logash, like most of the tech priests I've come across, had the social skills of a bath mat.
"One. Probably something to do with all those augmetics. It must be difficult to interact with mere humans when you feel you've got more in common with a beverage dispenser."
Instead of subsiding like any normal person, he nodded eagerly and started waving an auspex around as though it were an incense burner.
"There are some interesting striations in the ice layer," he said, "which could be frozen over claw marks. Still too vague to make a clear determination, though..."
I caught the sergeant's eye and raised my own brows in a pantomime of tolerant exasperation. She smiled back a little nervously, not quite sure how to respond to a commissar with a sense of humour and no doubt in awe of my reputation.
"I think if your people are ready, we might as well move on," I said, already sure they would be, and she gave the order with alacrity. "Voorhees, front and centre. Let's get ourselves a new trophy for the messroom wall."
Logash shot me an unhappy look, which I ignored, and the point man dropped nimbly through the hole in the floor.
"I'm down," he said, his voice still attenuated in the combead. "No sign of life."
The rest of his fire team followed him, rappelling into the darkness below.
"One. The rest of his fire team. The Valhallan 597th divided its squads into two fire teams of five troopers each, a common, though unofficial, practice in regiments experienced in urban warfare."
The glow of their illuminators was visible now, diffusing through the ice floor like the first faint echo of the dawn breaking somewhere a clom or two over our heads, rippling like an aurora borealis.
"Two. In fact, according to the schematics, the lowest level of the mines was almost 3 kilometres below the surface at this point."
"I'll turn," I said with a cheerfulness I hoped no one would realise was forced, and stepped confidently up to the gap, trying to suppress the memory of my vertiginous plunge into the unknown the previous day. I bounced down the slope, the support of the rope more a comfort than I'd realised, and found my boot heels crunching against the hard-packed scattering of ice crystals on the floor before I even knew it. The chamber was just as I'd remembered it, featureless save for the tunnel mouth we'd come to investigate. But it was crowded with troopers this time. A moment later, Jürgen slithered down next to me. The heavy melter slung across his shoulders pulled him over to one side, but he regained his balance and hefted it properly back into position. The small knot of troopers around us took a step or two away. Logash came next, clinging too tightly to the rope so that he descended in a series of jerks and wild parabolas. The guardsmen and women watched his progress with unconcealed amusement and the expectation of an ignominious tumble to come. To his credit, he made it, though, letting out his breath in a wild rush as he reached the floor of the cavern.
"Are you all right?" I asked, reaching out a hand to steady him. He nodded. "Yes, fine. I'm just not very good with heights, to be honest."
He caught sight of the splash of ichor from where I'd shot our quarry and went scuttling off to examine it without another word. Soon I heard him muttering in disappointment at the way our boot prints had disturbed any tracks the thing might have left. I looked up to check the progress of Griffin and the remaining four troopers, who were all descending without any problems. When I looked back, the little tech priest was arguing furiously with Private Voorhees. I strode over to investigate, wondering once more whether bringing him was turning out to be more trouble than it was worth.
"What's going on?"
I asked, trying to sound reasonable.
Voorhees had the young tech priest held firmly by the upper arm, evidently restraining him.
The trooper jerked an irritable head at the mouth of the tunnel, which the creature had disappeared.
"He tried to get past me," he said.
I shone my illuminator into the darkness, the beam catching 1,000 glittering highlights from the irregular walls. Then I turned to glare at Logash.
"I thought I made it clear to you were to stay close to Jürgen," I said. My aide had accepted the ad hoc bodyguarding assignment as phlegmatically as he did with every other order, and I suppose Logash could be forgiven for being less than enthusiastic about it. That wasn't his main concern at the moment, though. He jerked his arm free of Voorhees' restraining grasp with a degree of petulance which reminded me of a sulky Juve, and pointed at the tunnel floor and the pool of light from my luminator. "I was looking for tracks," he said, clearly wanting to say a great deal more. "The ground in here is too trampled to tell anything from." "Right, fine," I said. I turned back to Voorhees. "Keep him in sight. He goes no farther than 5 meters." I returned my gaze to Logash. "That should be enough for you, right?"
"Oh, yes, indeed."
He trotted a couple of paces into the tunnel, spotlit by the beam of the luminator Voorhees had taped to the barrel of his lasgun, and squatted down to wave the bloody Auspex around. Sure, he could still hear me. I turned to grin at Voorhees. "Maybe we'll catch it quicker if we leave some bait out." "Worth a try," he agreed with a smile of his own. Logash ignored us, already wrapped up in his data divining rituals. After a few moments, he walked back to join us, still muttering under his breath as he studied the display of the little machine.
"Well?" Griffin demanded. "Can you tell what it is yet?"
Logash looked confused.
"Well, there are indications. If we were anywhere else, I might take a guess. But the habitat's all wrong.
Then just give us what you can," I encouraged gently. Griffin nodded, flicking her black hair out of her eyes as she tried to make out the runes on the screen. But they were all tech priest gibberish, and none of the rest of us could make head or tail of it. Logash shrugged.
"It definitely burrowed these tunnels," he said. "There are claw marks on the walls and ceiling as well as the floor."
A flicker of apprehension rippled around most of the troopers. The narrow passage was high enough to stand up in without stooping, even for me, and if not quite wide enough for two abreast, had at least enough room for us to be able to see past the man in front, and shoot too, which was more to the point.
One. Kane was just under 2 meters in height and was generally among the tallest in any given group.
The creature must have a considerable reach, that much was obvious. "Well, we're not going to find it by standing here," I pointed out, more to steady the troops than anything else, "and we still have to map these tunnels." So we set off into the dark, our nerves taut with fearful anticipation. I was more at ease down here than any of my companions, with the possible exception of Jürgen, who simply accepted the situation as he did everything else with taciturn stoicism. These tunnels were different from the ones I was used to, however. They turned and meandered, apparently at random, with innumerable branching corridors that came to a dead end or turned back on themselves to rejoin the one we just left, or split into further radial passageways. I had several occasions to thank the Emperor for my sense of direction. Without it, I'd have been disorientated within moments, but the subconscious instinct, which lets me know roughly where I am and how far I've come in an underground environment, proved as reliable as ever.
"It's a fracking maze down here," one of the troopers, Dreer, I think, muttered under her breath.
Griffin silenced her with a few well-chosen words in the manner of sergeants the length and breadth of the galaxy. Logash was travelling in the middle of the group next to me, as I hoped to keep a respectable number of heavily armed troopers between me and the creature, whichever direction it approached from. Logash agreed, heedless of the sergeant's admonishment.
"Surprisingly extensive for so recent an excavation," he added.
Just then the palms of my hands started tingling in the way they do when my subconscious warns me of something my forebrain has yet to grasp.
"How recent?" I asked.
Logash pointed out something on the screen of the Auspex, which I couldn't see clearly.
"A few weeks," he said.
"A couple of months at the most. In other words, about the same time the orcs turned up. And that was just too much of a coincidence. Not that I believed for a moment it was some kind of squig we were after."
One. Squig. A generic term for a bewildering variety of organisms apparently associated with orcs. Opinion in the Ordo Xenos remains divided as to whether they represent true symbiosis or are simply an entire genus of unpleasant creatures sufficiently close to the greenskin's peculiar metabolic processes to flourish in close proximity to them. It is undeniable that they do seem to accompany most orcish infestations, however. Where Kane picked up the word is conjectural, presumably from the same source as the rest of his smattering of orcish.
The chances of that were extremely remote, as anything the greenskins had brought with them would have arrived at the same coordinates. But the space hulk which had brought them to the system, and to my intense relief, dropped back into the warp again within hours, could have carried any number of other horrors in its bowels, and if that were so, it wasn't unlikely that something else had seized the opportunity to make planetfall at the same time. I made a mental note to ask Quintus to look through the sensor logs of the refinery's orbital traffic control system when we got back. The chances were the blaze of warp energy emitted by the hulk's emergence, 1,000 times stronger than that of a starship, would have swamped them. But there might be a clue there we could disentangle given time. Any further opportunity I might have had to muse on the matter was abruptly curtailed as I felt a faint tremor through the soles of my boots. My palms tingled again, foreboding flooding through me. The narrow passageway seemed even more claustrophobic than before, although that's not a sensation I'm normally familiar with either. The faint tremor intensified, and I stopped trying to identify it. I felt a yielding impact against my shoulder blades as Griffin walked into me and halted in her turn.
Commissar, what is it? She asked. Quiet.
I looked back and forth down the tunnel, craning my neck to see as best I could past the troopers on either side of me. The light from our illuminators receded in both directions, still striking dazzling highlights from the deep blue surface of the ice around us.
Something's coming.
Nothing here, Voorhees said, his voice crackling over the comnet from 100 meters or so up the tunnel.
Nothing back here either,
Private Hale chipped in, her voice tense. I can't say I blame her for that. The rear guard is the second most vulnerable position in the column. Everyone stared at me, probably wondering whether the commissar had gone bonkers, except for Jürgen, of course, who had doubtlessly made up his mind on that score years before. But all my hiver's instincts insisted I was right. Something was coming, even if we hadn't seen it yet. Sudden understanding punched me in the gut. The creature we were hunting was a burrower. It didn't need to come at us along an existing passageway. No doubt it had detected our presence in some way, probably picking up the vibrations of our footfalls, and was heading straight towards us by the most direct route.
Jürgen! I shouted. Give us some elbow room!
Divining my intentions, the troopers nearest to us scattered back along the passageway. Logash was hauled away, protesting by Griffin, who couldn't be bothered trying to explain. His voice was drowned out abruptly by the hiss of the melter as Jürgen fired at the wall, instantly flashing 12 cubic meters of ice into steam, which condensed almost instantly in the sub-zero temperatures, filling the narrow passageway with mist. He was just in time, too. An instant later, the newly frozen wall burst in on us in a hail of glittering ice shards, and the living nightmare I'd encountered before was among us. By sheer foul luck, I was the closest to it, and I barely had time to draw a weapon before it was upon me. This close-up, a gun would have been all but useless, so I drew my chainsword, almost without thinking, and made a block with the instinctive lack of thought that comes from assiduous practice. It was lucky I had. An impossibly long arm, tipped with the talons I'd glimpsed before, swung at me as I thumbed the selector to maximum speed. It would probably have disemboweled me if I hadn't deflected the blow. The blade whined, cutting through plates of chitin, which wouldn't have seemed out of place on a Tyranid, and the thing howled with rage and pain. I was vaguely aware of Jürgen standing aside to make room for some of the other troopers, whose barrel-mounted luminators spotlit the confrontation. They were hoping they could get in a shot which wouldn't vaporize me along with the monster I fought, but the hope was a vain one. We were locked in too close and circling too fast for anyone to have a hope of getting a clear line of fire. It's moments like this, incidentally, which point up the wisdom of fostering the illusion that I cared about the common troopers. I have no doubt at all that were I the type of commissar who relies on intimidation rather than respect to get the job done, and there were all too many of those around, most of the grunts would have taken the shot anyway and cheerfully reported that the creature got me first. It's a lesson I try to pass on to my cadets in the hope that the less boneheaded among them might actually get to enjoy a reasonably lengthy career, but it's probably a wasted effort. I drove in under the thing's barrel chest, which barely came up to my chin, and tried to avoid the huge mandibles which snapped at my face as I ducked. Bizarrely, the thing's unnaturally long arms were jointed about 2/3 of the way up its length, so the closer into it I remained, the harder it would be for it to reach me. Well, that suited me fine. I swung the humming blade at its thorax, feeling the teeth bite home, and was rewarded with a spray of ichor and foul-smelling viscera. It screamed again, opening the mandibles impossibly widely and bringing its head down to snap at me. That was precisely what I'd been hoping for. The tactic worked well on some of the larger Tyranid bioforms, so I was ready and waiting, thrusting the tip of my trusty chainsword up through the open maw to chew its way contentedly through what passed for the creature's brain. I snatched my hand away quickly, fearing the reflex closing of those terrible jaws and opening up a wide gash which split the side of its head open from the inside. A jet of blood and cerebral fluid sprayed the wall, which hardened to ice within seconds. That was enough. The creature fell, making me scramble backwards in an undignified fashion to get out of the way, crashing into the ice at my feet. Thin flakes of powdered ice, condensed from the steam, rose into the air and fluoresced like miniature galaxies in the light from our luminators. "That was amazing," Griffin said, clearly torn between protocol and the urge to pat me on the back. The murmur of voices among the troopers told me that she wasn't the only one to be impressed. Only Logash was looking at the creature rather than me, his face an almost comical mask of confusion. "There's your specimen," I told him, returning my trusty chainsaw to its scabbard. "Do you think you can identify it?" "It's an Anbul," he said, shaking his head in bafflement. "But it can't be. They're native to Luther MacIntyre 9. "I never heard of it," I said. "But it wouldn't be the first time a species jumped planets." "That's not the point. Anbul colonies are already known on dozens of worlds." The young tech priest looked completely bewildered. "But they're all desert dwellers, like their native stock. This creature shouldn't be on an ice world at all." "Maybe it got lost," one of the troopers suggested. His comment was accompanied by derisive laughter from his squad mates. I didn't join in. Something was badly wrong here, that much was evident, even without my tingling palms to underline the fact. And as I looked at the creature I'd slain, I noticed something else that wasn't quite right. "Where are the Lasgun wounds?" Jürgen asked, putting my thought into words an instant before I could. "I definitely saw you hit it the last time." "It's a different one," I said, looking to Logash for confirmation. "That means there must be another one of these things down here with us." "More likely several," he confirmed eagerly. "Ambles tend to form extended social groups." "Better and better," I thought sourly. "But if only I'd known, there was far worse still to come."